In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 5% off your first purchase with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for 5% off your first purchase.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, folks. My name is Declan Maron. You're very welcome to this week's Young Stock Podcast, the podcast by young journalists for young readers and listeners to the Irish Farmers Journal, supported by MOCRA. And yes, I did say young journalists. There was a bit of an internal inquiry in the office to see if I was eligible to host a Young Stock Podcast. But the blue card has been checked, dates verified, and I can confirm we're still eligible for the full under 30-month inspect bonus for another few months at least. Folks, we have a great show lined up for you this week. If you're a young farmer, a young person in rural Ireland, working in agriculture, or you want to hear more about rural life, this is the place to be. But we also want to get your feedback and comments and queries, so if you want to get in touch with the show, you can send an email to youngstock@farmersjournal.ie or leave us a WhatsApp voice note by contacting 086-836-6465. So in the big interview this week, I speak to Duncan Morrison, a suckler beef farmer in the northeast of Scotland. I visited Duncan's farm back in 2017. At the time, his main ambition was to have 100 cow suckler herd by the time he turned 30. As you'll hear in a few minutes, he's far surpassed those ambitions. But first, here's a word from our sponsor.
Looking for somewhere to talk about all things farming? Then make sure to join MOCRA na Fairma. Our Ag Affairs Committee are always on top of the latest farming issues and want to hear what you have to say. But we're all about having the crack too, which is why we have plenty of events and competitions happening all the time. So what are you waiting for? Sign up to MOCRA today and make sure to add the promo code PODCAST so you will be entered into a draw to win 2 tickets to a concert of your choice in the 3 Arena. Sign up via our website, mocra.ie.
So Duncan, thanks very much for coming on the show. I think you have a great story to tell, especially for young farmers that are maybe trying to start out their own farming careers. I want to discuss with you how you built a farming business, the difficulties and around scaling up a beef enterprise, which can be so difficult. But first of all, maybe can you tell us about your current farm operation as it stands today and farming in the northeast of Scotland?
Thanks, Declan. Yeah, we farm in Aberdeenshire. We're probably around 20 minutes west of Aberdeen. Farm over 3 units now. I have a rented unit that's on a 5-year tenancy. Run 226 acres there. We also have part of my family's farm, which is owned near Inverurie. And there's about 107 acres there. We also farm another unit on a sort of contract farming style basis, and there's about 225 acres there. We're predominantly beef cows. At the moment, we'll be calving around about 200 cows this spring and around about 50 heifers to bull. With one or two dropouts, we should be looking to bull around about 240 this year. They're a mixture of stabiliser, Aberdeen Angus, and commercial cross cows. We breed pure Anguses, and we're stabiliser multipliers. So it's predominantly, you know, a low input style system. It's all done off grass. And the majority of the time, we're just trying to do things cheaply and efficiently. Yeah, it's just sort of snowballed over the last few years from there.
Brilliant. Yeah.
So that's kind of a snapshot of where you are currently. Like, that's a fair business to have built up in a short number of years. So I want to just maybe take a step back, one or 10 steps maybe. You know, maybe how you started out on your own. I know you took on the tenancy firm yourself, and, you know, how that came about. And then how did you start to build numbers? Like, beef cows, the hardest thing probably, you know, a slow returning enterprise to start out with. How did you start that snowball rolling?
My family, you know, I was born and brought up with suckler cows. That was quite a small for Aberdeenshire levels. You've seen as quite a small family farm, about 230 acres, kept about 60 cows, and we finished all the progeny off farm direct to the slaughterhouse. That was my upbringing, and always loved working with cows. For us, the business wasn't big enough for me to come back home straight away. So I went to college, to SEC in Aberdeen, the degree in agriculture. During the studying there, I went to work a farm near Kintore, which is actually the place that I now contract farm. I got involved working in livestock there, really enjoyed just the day-to-day running of a suckler herd. So I decided that was the sort of direction I wanted to go in life. After I left college, I took on a job as a stockman. It was about 180 cows, but also mental cows, to a Charlotte Bull. So I experienced the continental system, which I didn't really enjoy, to be honest.
That would be a more typical northeastern beef production system than what you're running currently, wouldn't it be?
Absolutely, yeah. It's the bread and butter of Aberdeenshire suckler farm, and enjoyed the responsibility of being in charge of that herd. I didn't enjoy all of the things that went along with running continentals. So yeah, I did that for a few years, and then I moved down to a herd near Stonehaven, which is south of Aberdeen. There was about 200 pedigree Angus cows, and I worked there for a number of years as well. So I got to experience a different kind of system, slightly lower input and easier calving. I then wanted to try and test myself a little bit, and I wanted a bit more responsibility. So again, I moved north nearer home to a farm that was looking for a farm manager. It was a smaller farm, but it was a bit of a one-man band. It was about 400 acres, 100 cows. But unfortunately, that only lasted 6 months because the guy who owned the farm was a bit of an oil businessman in Aberdeen, and he needed to try and pull some money out of the farming business and put it back into his oil business. So the farming operation took the brunt of that. So the herd was being dispersed and the farmers being rented out. And at that point, I thought, well, I've actually got an opportunity here. Made an approach to him to buy the cows from him and rent his farm. I managed to get finance through the local market, who helped me assist to buy the cows, built a business plan, spent ages working on that, and went around a few different banks to try and get funding. Got a few rejections, a few maybes, and I got two yeses, and I picked the one that suited me best. So essentially, I started a suckler herd. I didn't have a permanent farm to speak of. Around about that time, that was 2015, January 2016, my dad died in December 2015. So the family farm was in a bit of a turmoil at that point. So I wasn't quite sure how things were all going to turn out, but there was a bit of a succession thing going on. And I just felt it was quite a good time for me to actually go away and just do my own thing. The timing of it worked out quite nicely. Yeah. But the farm I actually took on at that point was just on a seasonal basis. So it was literally just from May until October. I bought 49 cows, spring calving cows, and they were in calf to an Angus, if I remember right. But luckily enough, that summer of 2016, the guy who I originally worked for with the cemental cows was actually retiring. Okay. And his farm was being split up into two units, and there was a tenancy available. So I got to hear on the grapevine that was becoming available. The estate knew who I was, and they knew a little bit about me, and they knew that I was keen and trying to get going. They had an idea to try and give a young person a chance, and then the whole thing just snowballed from there.
Very good. And just go back to, you know, you were on about you got some finance through the mart. Just can you explain how that worked and what was the arrangement there?
Yeah, so it's I don't know if it's a thing in Ireland, but it's certainly our local mart. They're really supportive, and they have been over the last few years to me. The way it works is for us, it was buying privately, so it was a dispersal. So they were able to, they came out and valued the cows, and we agreed a value. A cow and calf outfit pair. The auctioneers came out and valued the cows, and we agreed a value between the three parties. And then there was a deposit of around 20%, which I paid. The mart actually paid the farmer the full amount, and then I then owe the market. So I pay a 20% deposit, and then there were two 40% payments due annually until the full fees paid off. The black and white of it is that in the springtime of May, I paid a 20% deposit for these cow and calf outfits, like a month old, 6 months, 6 weeks old calves. Then the 40% payment is then due in the autumn when I sell the calf as a weaned calf. And then the following 40% is due the following autumn once I've got the second run of calves off. So yeah. If your budgets are quite tight, it's quite an easy way of doing it.
Yeah, it is. It's a great system. And I suppose then for the mart too, it's getting the next generation into the system too, because it can be such a high cost to try and get in. Yeah. So, you know, it works for everyone. All right. Alongside that, a fencing business as well. You know, you found time along with doing all that. You had a fencing business. When did that start, and how important was that in terms of keeping cash flow going and maybe funding as well, helping fund your farm enterprise?
Yeah, so the fencing business started pretty much the same time as the farming business started, pretty much the same day. Once I was made redundant from the place I'm farm managed, I literally, you know, I was self-employed from that day onwards, and I needed money. I worked with another guy that I knew who did fencing for the first few months. I labored with him. It was okay, it worked fine, but, you know, I was working to his schedule and it didn't always suit mine. And then realized that I was capable of doing it myself. Actually, I thought, well, let's just go for it. Yeah, at that point, I just decided just to crack on. It was really a really useful thing for me. At fencing in particular, just suits my sort of working life completely, because it's, you know, it's 12 months of the year. There's always work all the time, but no one's ever really that desperately needing you there at 8 a.m. You know, you can pick and choose what day of the week you want to work. You can work 7 days or 2 days. It just works really well. It was really important for me right at the very start, because it funded the gap between, you know, getting calves on the ground and getting, you know, getting them sold. Beef cows are notoriously difficult to start out, and most people thought it was stupid starting a business with cows. And but the reason I started with cows is because I knew cows, and I trusted myself to do the right thing. And if I was going to start with sheep, for example, and I hadn't really worked with sheep that much, so I decided to go the way I knew.
Go with what you know, yeah. But that would be the most common entry way into farming fair. A lot of people would be start with sheep, cheap and cheerful, and then after a few years, move into your cow herd. I know you're a man for the detail and the farm plans and the data, and I'd say you've analysed everything. But was there days when you were thinking, Jesus, this is a big mistake here, what have I done, or where am I going? I'm sure there was tough times as well during those first couple of years.
Yeah, I was like 50-50. It was like good day, bad day, good day, bad day. I think the thing with the suckler cow was the herd. I just knew that it was always a long game. I was never expecting it to work on day one, and I was always just playing the long game. I've always played the long game, and I just, you know, when the times are a bit tough, money is a bit tight, or, you know, things aren't just going the way you wanted them to, you know, you're always just looking at the future and thinking, well, you know, in 6 months' time, this will be, you know, it'll be better, or it'll be, you know, I'll pay this off, or, you know, or in 3 years' time, look what I'm going to have once I get this done, you know. So you're always looking to the future. So that would be my sort of way of getting through the tough times. But yeah, always lots of challenges. But I think the thing that I was founded was that, you know, when I set out to do my business plan right at the very start, I said what I was going to do. I had a plan in mind, and I just stuck to that plan as best I possibly could, because I knew the plan, you know, was going to work. I'd done a lot of research. I'd done experienced a lot of different systems. I went across to New Zealand a couple of times and I studied their low input system, their hill country cows, real proper low input, low labor, you know, and I just thought, well, actually, that's a huge opportunity here because we've got the most expensive beef in the world almost, you know, the Scotch premium and Angus premium, and you stick all that together, how can we not make it work? It's just labor and it's just inputs. So if we can try and cheapen the job, you know, there's opportunity there. So I stuck to that plan and we're heading the right direction, I think.
So far, so good. I suppose then the system itself, so you're 100% spring calving, I take it. So just talk us through, you know, when you start calving for, you know, what time of the year you start to get grass growing up with ghee. Take us through a full system and your wintering as well for the cows.
As you say, we're all spring calving. We used to bull for three cycles. The very first year I had cows, they calved from the 1st of March. The idea there was to try and get big enough weaned calves to sell in October, November. But I quickly realised that for my system, it just didn't really work. The farm that I rent, the very first farm I rented, we didn't have much buildings. So we decided to calve everything outside. We calved outside at home. So I knew how that worked and I knew that it did work. But yeah, calving outside in March, not that great, a lot of snow, and it just wasn't really ideal. So the following year, I pushed it back a month into April. And over the time, the last few years, that sort of developed and I've tweaked it. So we're now calve from the 8th of March and we only bull for two cycles now. So it's just 6 weeks and everything's done and dusted. The main reason for that is, well, because it's efficient in terms of labour and checking things. Also do a fencing business, as you mentioned. So, you know, the less time I've got hanging around at home looking for this last couple of cows calving, you know, the more time I can be away earning money or, you know, just relaxing and not worrying about cows. So, you know, so we're down to 6 weeks now and yeah, everything calves in spring, outdoors and grass. Heifers as well. We calve heifers at two. From that point onwards, we rotational graze all summer. All the farm is split into probably about hectare paddocks, pulling groups of around about 25 to 30. I do a bit of AI for the Anguses and stabilisers, a few embryos as well to try and improve the genetics that we're bringing in. So, yeah, and then through the summer, we don't keep feed because I'm trying to produce a grass-based herd and I don't find creep feeding achieves any of those goals. I've basically, I hate it. I hate creep feeding. I just don't understand it. And it for me, in my opinion, it just does not suit me at all. Okay. Certainly the way the price of feed is going, it just for me, it just doesn't stack up.
Yeah.
But the thing I'm, you know, because we're sort of low input and you're trying to build up the business, you really need cows to work for you rather than vice versa. So because we don't creep feed, I can see which cows are milking and which ones aren't.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're when we get through to weaning time, we'll weigh all the calves at birth as well, just to mention that. But we'll weigh the calves at weaning time and we'll weigh all the cows. And then we'll go through the spreadsheet and we'll work out the cow-calf weaning ratio and look at the cows that are giving us 30% and compare them to the cows that are giving us 50%. And, you know, it's a really important thing to look at for a cow herd, because those cows that are maybe 600 kilos and weaning you a 300 kilo calf, well, they're streets ahead of the cows that are 800 kilos and they're giving you a 275 kilo calf.
Yeah.
In terms of your stocking rate and your feed cost and your wintering cost. So we're really focused on that. From weaning onwards, we'll wean in sort of November time. The cows are outwintered. Originally, we used to outwinter on forage crops, solely kale. But that system has developed to try and cheapen the job even further. We're now utilising deferred grass and silage. Because it's even cheaper. splitting the risk a little bit and reducing the area, because I felt as if we're solely on kale, we needed too much area and we're constantly reseeding grass and catching up on ourselves. I pick a field that's in poorer grass, we'll graze it in the spring and let it build up covers all the way through until November. We'll place out silage bales in the summertime and then strip graze it through the wintertime. I don't mind if it gets chewed up, because we'll then, in the spring, following spring, we'll run through it with a set of discs and put in kale. And then the following winter, we'll run through it again with discs and we'll put in arable silage under soil.
Okay, brilliant.
So we're trying to split the risk and reduce the wintering area a little bit.
Yeah.
The fair grass is also really good for us, because it holds up in wet weather much better than pure kale. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as you'll know, kale crops or most forage crops can get pretty messy in the rain and that. So because we've got a choice, we can pick and choose. You can say, well, it's really wet weather, we're going to pull them onto the fair grass for the next few weeks. And then suddenly you get 3 weeks of frost, right? We're going to stick them onto the kale, and you can just mix and match and make it to suit yourselves. In terms of the young stock, the heifers that we intend to bull, they are then outwintered themselves on Red Start and the fair grass. So they're kept outside. It really toughens them up, and it sort of falls in line with what we're trying to do in terms of improving the herd and making them hardier and tougher and more of a grass-based machine.
You're seeing at that stage maybe heifers not performing, you know they're not going to fit your system, so you're finding out at the earliest stage possible, you know, animals that don't suit the system. And I assume as you go on year on year, Duncan, that the number of those animals that don't suit the system is reducing, because your cow is, you know, you must have had a high cull rate there for a few years with animals that you were taking on, maybe that weren't your ideal cow, that must have fallen out of your system either through not being suitable to outwintering or just weren't going back and calf in your short bulling period. So there must have been a high cull rate there.
Yeah, I would say there was a high dropout. Yeah, that would be fair. Certainly when we bought the original herd, you know, they weren't all the kind of cows I definitely wanted. You know, there was a bit of a mixture. There were good ones and bad ones and whatever else. And that's 7 years ago that we started. And, you know, we've went through quite a few cows. But the ones we've got now, there's not that many dropout. And now that we're at 6 week bulling, you know if a heifer calf can get through the winter time with no creep outside, no concentrates either through winter time, or wintering on the fair grass and silage, and then getting calf in 6 weeks, and then calf on her own outside, and then get back in calf again. I mean, there's not much more I can really do to test them.
No.
So, and the thing that sort of one of the main drivers for that system for me is, you know, I see a big shift in the beef industry here in Scotland. People just can't afford to have a mechanized system, a heavily mechanized system, high input. It just, I don't think it really stacks up anymore. Mm-hmm. So people that do want to have cows going forward are going to need stock that are capable of doing it, low input and low labor. So they're going to need breeding stock. They're going to need bulls and they're going to need heifers. And my plan was to breed that kind of stock.
Yeah. So the goal is that you will have excess heifers in years to come, that people will be, you'll be selling those as bullers, I assume, in the spring of the year.
Yeah. We've started doing that now. We sold about 15 heifers last April, May time. So that was the start of it. We've started selling some bulls privately off farm as well. Yeah. We'll have more heifers this spring. So, and then just to finish off the winter time, there will be store cattle kept inside and finished off. And we will sell stores through local market as well, just as a cash flow thing. And then we'll try and finish the stores that we don't sell off grass in the following back end.
Okay.
So
So I suppose, what proportion of your stock are you taking through to slaughter yourself at the moment?
Nowadays, it would probably be about 40%, I would say, roughly.
Yeah.
I'd say probably about 40% finished, 20% sold for breeding, and maybe another 40% sold store.
Mm-hmm. Those store animals, yeah. What age and what weight would you be targeting there?
Usually through our local market, anything below 400 kilos is a bit of a discount. You know, everyone wants to get 400 kilos. So,
yeah.
But I will sell at various points through the calendar. We had a few away last week. They were just 9-10 months old, but they weren't quite 400 kilos. They were sort of 330, 340 sort of weights. But we'll drip feed them through the year. But generally into April, we'll have a clear out. And probably in October, November, we'll try and finish as many off grass as we can. And then at that point, draw a line in the sand and say, right, you're going away as a forward store from now onwards.
Yeah, okay.
And take that pressure off myself.
Brilliant.
Finish them.
Just quickly on, you mentioned the stabilizer. So you're always really an Angus herd when I was with you. Over in Scotland, but you know, you've taken on the stabilizers now, Kevin Gilbert's herd. So you know, you mentioned that's kind of on a lease agreement. Can you just explain how that works?
Yeah, so a really good opportunity, and I need to say Kevin has been a really big support of us, and he's, you know, a really forward thinking guy to be, you know, to do this. As I mentioned right at the start, I worked with Kevin when I was a 17-year-old student, and I really enjoyed it. And yeah, I didn't really expect to come back and to be running the place later on in life, but it's worked out really nicely. But basically, the way it worked was Kevin had decided that he was looking to step back from farming a little bit, and he was just trying to take life a little bit easier. But as most of you all know, that if you go and sell a suckler herd tomorrow, the tax man's going to run away laughing. So he was trying to do things efficiently and smoothly, trying to step back from farming in a quite sensible way. And he sort of approached me asking if I was interested in coming up with some kind of arrangement with him. This is a beautiful thing about podcasts. I've listened to a podcast in America, and they were talking about cow leasing agreements.
Yeah.
And it's not something I'd heard about, but it was literally just about 2 weeks before he approached me, and I thought, actually, that could work for us. So the arrangement we've got, actually, the way it works is I rent his cow herd from him on a per head basis. So I pay him a rent per cow, and he owns the cows fully throughout the whole agreement, and it's on an annual rent. When the cows are put to the bull, and the calf, when the calf hits the ground, it's owned by me, and then they get weaned, and the calf, when it hits the ground, is fully owned by me. Yep. When the cow gets called out, he calls it out, and he gets the payment for the abattoir for that. Because he owns the cow and he registers the calf, he gets his calf sub, which is a reasonable payment as well. So for him, he gets an annual sort of income from the cows that he knows what he's going to get, and he knows that there's going to be so much culled out per year as well. For me, it means I can build up the numbers of breeding stock pretty efficiently. I've got to pay for all the feed and the vet and med, but if I can do that cheaply and efficiently, then that's not too big. And then every bull and heifer that I replace, you know, it's me buying into the herd, basically.
Yes.
So we've been doing that for 2.5 years now, and yeah, so I've probably replaced about 40 cows or so from him. So I'd say of the 240 that I'll be bulling this spring, he would own about 200, he'd still own 75 or so roughly. So,
okay.
And that started out about 120.
Right.
So
you're probably another just, 3-4 years in that, and then he's kind of, his cows will be all gone. They're probably at that stage, will they?
Pretty much, yeah. So they were all stabilizers, and he was a stabilizer multiplier. And that was sort of how I got my foot in the door from that respect. And as you mentioned, I was always an Angus man, and I still am.
Mm-hmm.
But the stabilizer actually ticked quite a lot of the boxes as well. And it's just a different kind of market. If we were selling beanstalk, lots of people like stabilizers, and they like what they represent, like the data, like the ease of management, and they're almost a bit of a halfway house for some people. If you're used to using Continentals, they can be seen as a bit of a halfway house because they're half continental themselves. So lots of good things.
Very good. So I assume then you've an instant market there for your stabilizer heifers, I assume, because Kevin would have had a market for some heifers. That's helped you for the business. But then I assume all the males then are kept entire as young bulls and finished under 16 months?
Yeah, that's right. We've kept everything entire because we're trying to keep some breeding bulls as well. It just sort of makes sense to keep everything entire because, you're always going to ring something that you realize that probably should be good. So kept everything entire. We've finished bull beef for the last couple of years with, I would say, mixed success. Certainly this past year wasn't a success, purely just because of the price of feed and the Ukraine thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't grow any arable crops. We're all grass. I was buying in all the feed and I just got shafted with that. But try to change things this year. I decided I'd roll the dice again, and I thought if it can't, I didn't want to just ring everything and steer them, because the bull beef thing does sort of work, they grow really well, but it was just the feed cost that sort of was the negative thing. So we did used to creep feed the bull calves, but we stopped that this time. So we stopped the creep feeding, and we've went to whole crop instead. So they're whole crop, they're again fed whole crop oats, peas and barley from weaning onwards, up until probably about the end of February. And they're only just getting a kilo or two of barley to top them up. And then we'll gradually boost them up right near the end. So it's a bit less intense, but it's maybe more intense right at the very end to try and build a bit of frame on. The reason I changed my tune was last year we actually had some bulls who were designated for breeding. And so they only got a little bit of creep feed, and then they were just on just a store cattle ration all through winter. But I found out their EDVs weren't good enough for breeding, because there's a cutoff. Stabilizers need to be in the top 35% to sell for breeding. But for one reason or another, I only found that out at 15 months. So I was like, oh, how the hell am I going to finish these bulls in a month?
Mm-hmm.
But believe it or not, of the three bulls that weren't fed at all, basically, one of them killed out at 401 kilos. One of them was 396 kilos. I think the other one was about 388. And they were all U3s. Brilliant. So I thought, well, why on earth have I got a shed full of ones and a hopper eating so much from weaning onwards? Why the hell am I doing that? So that's why I've decided to change tune a little bit and try and cheapen the job. We'll see if it works or not. Mm-hmm. But if this doesn't work, then I think the bull beef job for me is at risk. Because, because if you grow your own feed barley, then it's probably not so bad. But when you're buying it in, you're really vulnerable. And,
Again, I suppose for Scotland, bulls would be very much in the minority. It's primarily a steer system in operation there. So I suppose you having bulls going to market, you're reducing your amount of potential customers too. So you might have to move maybe to selling a weaned calf again or something like that. Would you look at that?
I think they work quite well as steers the following summer. So I would just, it would just be a bit of a cash flow hit probably. yeah, because you're keeping them another year almost. But if I could shoulder that burden a bit, then it would work, no problem. But
yeah,
but the bulls for me are, you know, it's quite a good cash flow thing, yeah, providing they're making money.
Yeah. Beef price at the moment fairly positive in Scotland.
Yeah, it's really buoyant actually. It's the store cattle trade's flying as well. So, again, it goes back to the thing I said very start with my business plan. There's loads of, you know, there's loads of money out there, but it's trying to save the money going out the way that is the real challenge.
Yeah. I suppose a big one in that is in the last 18 months has been fertilizer costs. A big user. I assume when you're so forage based and you're growing so much grass, you must use loads of fertilizer.
No, I don't use a kilo of fertilizer anymore. I used to use quite a bit of fertilizer on my forage crops, but I've never used fertilizer on grass ever. So the original farm that I took on, it hasn't had fertilizer on it for 7 years now. Once I moved back to the home farm, it hasn't had fertilizer for 5 years now, and the place I contract farm hasn't had fertilizer for 2 years.
Okay. I'd say on the home farm, did you see a reduction in production there until it gets over its, say, its addiction to fertilizer? Are you seeing a drop before it starts to increase again?
Yeah, you do. You definitely do. It all depends on clover. Clover is like the number one thing. If you don't have clover, you've got nothing, because the leased farm, the contract farm place I've got, it was a pig unit there as well. Loads of slurry on it, and there's not a single leaf of clover there in the whole farm. Yeah. So it's very nitrogen dependent, and as soon as you take it away, it is just like a drug addict on, you know, going cold turkey. So you do notice a big drop off, but we're reseeding, we're sticking clover back in, and it'll soon catch up. But once you've got clover and you're kind to it and you look after it, you know, it'll look after you much better than nitrogen will.
Brilliant. Duncan, we've covered a lot of ground there. I suppose one other thing to mention is you are now a monitor farm program. You're one of the farms in that, in the QMS program. So like, you know, you're going into that, I would say, ahead of the game. You know where you want to get to. It's just about maybe getting there a little bit more. But what are you hoping to get from that program, and what's the main benefits for your business going into a program like that?
Well, I suppose the main aim is just to make sure that I'm making profit, really, to be honest. It's number one. I've always been really competitive and really sort of driven. So I've always just sort of felt that, I think it was just sort of instilled into me from my dad, really. Nothing was ever good enough. So I just wanted to be the best that I could be, to be honest. And I just don't want to leave, you know, any stone unturned, and just make sure that I'm absolutely doing the best I can. And if it's still not profitable, then we'll just pack it up and leave. But, you know, at least we're trying our absolute best. The thing I sort of missed for a while was I was a member of a local grazing group. And then when that thing came to an end, I just sort of missed going on farms and visiting different people and meeting people and talking about farming and learning stuff. And it was a couple of years through COVID and that, when, you know, things just, there was none of that. And then the new monitor farm scheme came around, and I thought, well, I would like to go to the monitor farm meetings. And then I thought, well, actually, maybe I could just host it instead. Mm-hmm. So I applied and we got it. So we're just looking forward to just getting a chance to meet people and talk about farming. I love data. I love recording stuff. I love analyzing things. So, you know, it's really up my street. So we'll be looking at, you know, improving the suckler herd, improving performance, fertility, health, looking at soil. We've got a lot of soil sampling to do, trying to make sure that the farm's absolutely, you know, going as much as it can.
Brilliant.
And then there's a little bit on the environment as well, and carbon and all that sort of stuff as well. So
super.
Quite broad spectrum.
Duncan, thanks very much for that. We're going to finish off with our quick fire round, if you're up for the challenge. Right. right, here we go. So question one, football or rugby?
Oh, you Irish are going to hate me. It's football.
Big Aberdeen fan.
Yeah, big Aberdeen fan, yeah.
Starter or dessert, or pudding as you would say? Starter or pudding?
Starter.
Bale signage or pit signage?
Bale silage, actually, believe it or not.
A day spent driving the tractor or a day spent handling cattle?
Handling cattle.
Bull beef or steer beef?
Oh, steer beef.
A herbal lay or perennial ryegrass and white clover?
Herbal lay.
Plough or mint hill?
In theory, I would say mint hill. Yeah. But it has, I would say plough actually. Plough. plough.
Clear as mud, yeah, very good. A quad bike or dog?
Both. I love my dogs.
Good stuff. And finally, a day in the mart or a day on the beach?
Mart.
Duncan, thanks a million for chatting to us, and we'll take care. And if anyone wants to check out, you have a brilliant website as well, which just kind of shows you the amount of attention to detail there is. MorrisonLivestock.com, if anyone wants to have a check out of your website that shows your farms. Thanks very much for talking to us, and safe farming.
Cheers. Thank you, Declan. Bye-bye.
So there you have it, folks. Thanks very much to Duncan for coming on the show. You can see with a good plan and plenty of ambition, there's very little that isn't achievable. That's it for this week's show. Don't forget to get in touch with your opinions and feedback. You can email youngstock@farmersjournal.ie or leave us a voice note on WhatsApp at 086-836-6465. Thanks very much to Mocra for their support in making this possible. And of course, thanks to you for listening.
The softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.